This call is being recorded.
Hello, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester again with the Cooking Without Looking TV show podcast. I'm creator and executive producer, and today we're very fortunate to have Abby Griffith. Abby, how are you?
Hi, Renee. I am doing very, very well. Here in my time, this is 9 a.m. I kind of just got up, and I was so excited to be here on your Cooking Without Looking podcast show. And as I said, my name is Abby Griffith. I recently got a college graduate. I graduated from Washington State University, Vancouver, with my bachelor's degree in human development. And right now, I am working for Washington, Disability Rights Washington, as a transportation advocate. And I love cooking.
Well, that's a good love.
I love cooking and baking. I can cook and bake anything I put my hand on to. Originally, I am from Ethiopia, and I moved here 2008. Oh my God, it's like almost 14 years or 14 years. I can't even, I'm not even thinking how many years I've been here. But I moved here in 2008, and I was adopted by my American mother in Washington State. Since I was adopted, I lived here in Vancouver. My mom lives in Richfield, Washington, which is not too far from where I live, but I live in Vancouver because I moved out when I turned 18 and graduated from high school. And when I moved here, I was 14 years old, so I'm 27 years age right now. And as I said, I'm very excited. I am graduated from college, and my future goal is going for my master's degree in teaching blind, visually impaired students. But who knows? I'm still thinking it could change to something else. So I am very excited about life and opportunities and everything around me. So
well, that sounds good. Were you born blind, Abby?
No, I was not born blind. I was born completely sighted, and I lost my sight when I was 8 years old due to a snake, cobra snake accident. Yeah, I was completely sighted, and then I lost my sight, and I am completely blind right now.
So you had an accident?
Yes, it's just an accident that we have this poison cobra snake where I was playing outdoors close to my mom's house.
Oh my gosh.
I trip and fall, and I saw a snake, and I took control, and snake shoot poison into my right eye, and my right eye got infected. I could have died, but God saved me, so I was...
Oh, my gosh. I think that's, like, one of the most, like, amazing stories I think we've heard here already. You must have been frightened. How old were you? Were you, like, 8?
Yes, I was 8 years old when I lost my sight.
Were you frightened?
Oh, no, I am so frightened. My trauma still happens. I live with trauma.
Aww.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was frightened, and I am still, there's daily kind of thinking of my accident and what happened and what I said and stuff like that is affecting my life. So, but I'm doing good so far either.
Sounds like you're doing really well. You just graduated from college.
Yes, I did.
Now, did they give you any adaptive equipment? Did they give you JAWS or you read Braille? How did that work?
Yes, I use a JAWS program on my computer. I have a Braille. I use Braille display. I had a Braille note before, and I access my materials using Braille and a computer with JAWS. And school didn't give me Braille and JAWS program and computer, but I have my own equipment and school accommodations to make my school materials accessible for me to participate in class.
How did they? I'm sorry.
Everyone equally.
How did they do that with the textbooks? How did that work?
Textbooks. So every colleges, especially colleges, and have this. Some colleges call different names, but they have this disability support office or access center, something. They almost every college is called different, but my college has access center, which is I can go tell them what I need, and I have to, when I register for classes, I buy my book and bring my book and a receipt to Access Center staff member, and they take my book and my receipt and they translate my book into audio so I can read with my JAWS. They put my book in the audio e-text and then they make it accessible, and they can email to me or they can put on a flash drive and they give it to me. And I access my textbooks from there. Let's say if there's assignments, if my teacher have assignments in paper, my teacher has to access, contact Access Center stuff to make my paper that is not accessible for me into accessible text and e-text and my Access Center people makes it accessible for me. And so that way I can do assignment accessible way like everybody else. They make things accessible, anything that it can be homework assignment, it can be class assignment, it can be PowerPoint, it can be textbook, anything. I just have to tell Access Center, and they make it accessible for me, and they send it to me so I can do my class work.
Wow, that's really wonderful. And I'm skipping a step here, because when you got here to the United States, what language did you speak? Did you speak English as well as whatever language from Ethiopia?
I did not speak any English when I moved here. I learned.
Wow.
I am trilingual. I speak, my native language is Wolaita, regional Ethiopia, and I speak Amharic, which is more. Almost everybody speaks in Ethiopia. So I speak Amharic and Wolaita. And when I moved here, I did not speak, I did not write or read in English. And I knew thank you, yes, no, three words. But even though I know those three words, I didn't know where to use those words. So I just...
Wow, you speak English very, very well. I mean, like, that's amazing. It's like every single hurdle that you had to jump over, just to get to where you are. And it's like nothing stops you.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. I told myself I have to work hard in order to live good life. And I think you do have to work hard in order to be accepted by society as a disabled person. And even though if you are not disabled, it's good to work hard so you can live good life. So, yeah, luckily I understood that I should work hard and attending school and learning language and learning American culture and trying to get to know everything and leaving my family behind in Ethiopia and getting used to new family and everything was really hard. But by working hard and everything, I overcome all the obstacles in my life.
And oh my God.
Still learning English.
How did you actually learn the English? Did you watch TV? Did you go to classes or a combination?
That's a good question because TV, I didn't watch TV. I would say I do listen to TV and everything, but I did listen a lot of radios. Radio was good, and I don't know, it's kind of funny, but every morning I had a little radio in my room, and I turn on talk shows and stuff I listen to, and I also learned English in school, because the School for the Blind here in Vancouver, Washington, where I started going right after I moved here, 11 days. I moved here and my mom put me in the School for the Blind, even though I didn't speak any English. But luckily, they hired interpreter for me, a translator for me who speaks Ethiopian and English. And she was there with me for 1 year in the school. And she helped me in classes. And getting around and getting to know my area, the environment and everything. I just walked with her and asked her questions, and she tells me I'm Harik, and I kind of practiced a little bit with her English. But more, to be honest, I learned English just studying, reading, listening to radios, and talking with people, just practicing so much.
So what was the strangest thing or the most different thing, probably like everything, but what was the thing that you found most unusual about living in the United States?
Well, I think the culture shock for me was the food the first time I moved here, because...
What was that?
I had a hard time understanding different foods. Like when people say hot dogs, I was like, oh my god, we don't eat dog. I don't want to eat dog. I was thinking hot dog. and I gross out all the time. Oh my gosh, people eating dog. Or like here and there, like I had a little bit hard time getting used to eating food. Most hardest thing I would say, once I started school and everything, because of my accent and because I am Black and everything, I experienced some racism and everything that I should not have experienced in my country if I was there.
right. That must have been painful.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. You've had to overcome so much, and you're not that old.
Yeah. I'm getting tired, though.
oh, no. Don't give up.
It's gonna
only get better. But how did you learn to cook? And here you are in a totally different culture. How did you learn to cook and bake?
Well, when I moved here 14 years old, when I was kids too, I watch a lot when my mom's cooking. My mom had a little restaurant that she makes food and everything. I always watch. I help out. I was very, very helpful little girl in Ethiopia. I watch and I practice and I help out and stuff like that. So even though when I was blind, I tried to help. And I already know the basics of the cooking and the baking and everything in Ethiopian, but the food. But when I moved here in the school for the blind, I had BLS, Daily Living Skills classes I took. And there I cook, I clean. I learned how to cook and I learned how to clean. And I learned how to even like sew things like let's say if I have some button on my clothes comes off, I can put it back in. I even learned that in the sewing machine and everything in the school. So most good thing about my school for the blind where I went was that teaching me how to cook, clean, and do things, those independent living skills.
Now, do you still have your family back in Ethiopia?
I do. I have my mother, and I have brothers and sisters, and I have a lot of cousins.
yeah. A lot of cousins.
Yeah.
You must miss your family.
Oh yeah, that is why I call my mom every week, my people every week, my brothers and sisters. I make sure to talk to them, and I was lucky enough to go back to Ethiopia to visit them in 2018, two years ago. Yeah, I went back for the first time, and they literally celebrated like over hundreds of people standing outside and playing.
Oh my gosh!
Dancing, welcoming me, like crying, and some on the floor, some dancing, some crying, some laughing, some care, like picking me up and running around.
You were a princess.
Yes, it was like, oh my God, you are back in like our. It was beautiful, welcoming thing happened.
Did you cry?
Oh my goodness, I was tired because I flew here. It took 21 hours on the plane, and when I got there, in my mom's house from capital city, we drove 9 hours, and so I was so exhausted already from jet lagged and driving that long, and everybody kind of pulling me around and stuff. I was like, oh yeah, I don't. I'm done.
Well, do you have an Ethiopian recipe for us today?
I do. There's a lot of my favorite ones, but I can talk one that I cook mostly. I do have a recipe. My favorite recipe called, I like to cook Doro, what's Ethiopian food, very famous. And actually in Ethiopia, they don't cook that food a lot because it's kind of like event type of Doro, what like holidays or if they have guests coming home or things like that, just like for very fancy food. But here for me, I make it whenever I want.
So, there you go. Well, you know what? How do you spell that? What you're saying, the name of it? How do you spell that?
It's kind of like a confusion with English speak.
Yeah.
Doro. Doro is D-O-R-O. What is what we spell W-O-T, I think you can just spell it that way, Doro what, and people will know. And injera is like a flat bread. It's like a The idea of injera is, I would say, I don't want to say pita bread. I don't want to say tortilla, but the idea is, looks like.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's a little, it's like a fry bread or something. It's a little thicker than a tortilla, right?
A little thicker than tortilla, wider, very, a lot wider, and spongy, very nice, and spongy. And we, so like injera is spongy. Injera, E-N-J-A-R-A. Injera is spongy and wide, wider than tortilla. But what, Doro, what we make chicken. So I buy chicken, and of course we love washing, even though it's already packaged here. And in Ethiopia, traditionally, they buy chicken and kill in their house outside, and do all that process. They don't have already processed chicken from store. There's a fresh.
Oh,
yeah.
it's a chicken from the farm, right?
Yeah, a farm. Some people eat from farm, but a lot of people don't like eating their own chicken they raised. Especially my mom. She has like 50 chicken in the house, but she goes to the market to buy chicken so she can. She doesn't have to kill the chicken she raised. So she usually buys from market. But yeah, they use fresh chicken. A lot of process. It takes like, and when they make it, it takes almost day like, or half a day or longer. But for me, I just go to the store and buy chicken thighs or chicken drumsticks and stuff, whatever part of chicken I like, and I bring it home, wash it, and put it in the pot and cook until it's like really nice and tender. And separate pot, I put a lot of onion. We half a pot is onions.
Wow.
Yeah, and a lot of onions. Chicken door, what we use is a lot of onions, and I cook onion for like at least 5 to 10 minutes, and I put some olive oil. I put barbare is spice, very spice, like red jalapeno, I would say. It's like a powder, very spicy. And it can be spicy or very spicy or little spicy, but it's never be mild. So it's like, oh, it's spicy. I cook onions and add oil and add that spicy stuff into onion and stir it, keep it stirring every minute or two. And there's different things, seasonings for chicken making. So those called kororoma, kimam, abasha kimam. I don't know how to say all those in English, but those all are different type of seasonings for cooking chicken. So I add a little bit each, and I let that saute very, 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 very long. So like maybe 30 to 50 minutes and simmer it around. And once I cook, I put Ethiopian butter. When I say Ethiopian butter, it's just literally like a fresh nice butter, and they filtered, they boil and filtered and put seasonings to make it stay longer, not to last too soon. And so Ethiopian butter, I put in the sauteed onion and all kinds of spices I put in. And then I add chicken and that already cooked chicken. And I don't spill the chicken water, that breast that I cooked. After I put chicken, I saute together, stir it together. And once it get a little bit bubbly, I put that whole water from chickens into the pot that has onions and all that good stuff. And stir it back more and put very, very low heat and wait like maybe 2 to 1 hour or two until it cooks very, very summer together. And add more Ethiopian butter. And then I can wait to cool down and get my injera that is going to look like a tortilla bread. And I serve it.
That sounds amazing. Now, where do you get like the spices, the Ethiopian spices and the Ethiopian butter? Where do you purchase those?
I have here, I live in Vancouver, and I also have my boyfriend's place in Portland. We don't have Ethiopian market in Vancouver, but we have it in Portland, Oregon, where we are right on the border. So I go there and buy stuff, anything I want to make Ethiopian food from Ethiopian market.
Wow. So I understand that Ethiopian food is sort of like up and coming popular right now. Maybe you guys could open up an Ethiopian restaurant.
Oh my gosh. You literally just said what I was going to say next. I've been actually hoping, even though when I was working so hard for my degree, I was hoping for someday opening Ethiopian restaurant. Even if it's food cart, I really like that. Is my dream too, and we will see what happens when time comes. But that's my idea of just using my talents to cook and have my restaurant and come up with a lot of good Ethiopian food. Last night I made different dish, not the one I just talked about, but different Ethiopian dish that's very like unique to my region of Ethiopia, and it's really good. Like
it sounds amazing. It sounds really wonderful. This is probably one of the most interesting podcasts we've had. We haven't had anyone with any Ethiopian recipes. I've always wondered what some of the Ethiopian food was like.
Oh yeah, the one I made last night was it's so good. I buy like a short ribs. Usually I like buying beef short ribs with the bones and everything. Just like I talk about chicken, I put short ribs in the pot and I cook that like until it's tender, almost full off of bone. And then I prepare everything else. Like last night I put lettuce, one potato, half a lettuce, onion, garlic. I put green beans, a little bit corn and peas. Those little different type of vegetables it comes with. I put one tomato cut up and add and all that into the meat, the cooking and the pot. And when that everything, vegetable and meat, almost forgot jalapeno. I cut up 2 jalapenos and added. And then when that stuff is cooking, I mix all-purpose flour. I usually use corn flour, but this last night I used wheat flour and corn flour. So traditionally in Ethiopia, we mix with hand, like a dough, making dough, you know, like a big, like you're going to make a banana bread. And I make those dough and I mix it up, and once it really thick and ready to make shape, so once all done mixing, I take a little piece by piece and make shape of little. I can make any shape. I can make circle. I can make any shape. But I lay over on the plate, small pieces and small. It's like idea of hush puffy looking thing.
Oh, okay. But,
yeah, it's like a tester print and everything. So I make little pieces of those, and my meat and all vegetables and everything I put in the pot was cooking and very bubbly, and I slowly put those little things I make into the pot and cover it and cook it 15 more minutes. And I come back and stir around, not stir, but like make space to bubbly juice for meat and veggies and some oils and everything coming out, and stir it around a little bit, not to break those little circle creations I made from flour.
That's almost like a dumpling, right? It sounds similar to a dumpling.
Almost, yes. It's not just like dumpling, but it's almost idea the same. So then I add butter top of it, and I put like 5 more minutes and cook in stove, and then cool down, and delicious.
Oh my gosh, it just sounds amazing. Both of those things, I want to try them. I'm going to go online and look for some things, but that just sounds wonderful. Abby, if anyone wants to get advice on how to make their Ethiopian food or anything else, how can they get a hold of you?
I can share my phone number with you if you want, or do you want me email you my phone number? Or my email address.
Maybe your email address. Just give them your email address.
Okay, email address. Should I tell here?
Sure.
Okay. My email address is abby.griffith@gmail.com.
So that's Abby, ABBY dot Griffith, GRIFFITH 2@gmail.com.
Correct. And anyone, if they need help or want to learn how to cook Ethiopian food, any kind of Ethiopian food, I will help.
Well, that sounds amazing, Abby. Thank you so much for spending time with us and teaching us about your life, which, my God, you have been through so much and you're so young. I applaud you. You're amazing.
Thank you so much, Renee. Thank you so much for having me here.
Of course, Abby. And thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been the Cooking Without Looking TV show podcast. And if you want to learn more about Ethiopian cooking, just reach out to Abby. And thank you again. Our website is www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. And if you want to reach out to me, my number is 305-200-9104. Thank you for helping us change the way we see blindness, Abby. Have a great day.
You too. You too, Renee. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Sounds great. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.